teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams. The one they picked, the one you know by.
Welcome to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education, with your hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. This program will give parents and educators the skills and methods to effectively advocate for children today. And now, here's Rich and Michelle.
Welcome to this week's episode of Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education. I'm Michelle Davis, here with my co-host Rich Weinfeld. And this week, our title of our show is Overhaul of Troubled School Systems, a Controversial Visionary. This week, we'll explore what it takes to reform a broken school system using our nation's capital as an example. Some say Chancellor Michelle Rhee's plans to overhaul the District of Columbia's public schools is visionary and courageous, while others criticize her actions. Chancellor Rhee will discuss school reform with myself and Rich today, along with other models of school reform across the nation. We're going to explore with Chancellor Rhee the pros and cons of outsourcing troubled schools to private organizations and how decisions for reform are being made. And also, we'll be talking about how the competing interests over the control of the district makes her job even more challenging. And I'd like to remind, before Rich introduces Chancellor Rhee, I'd like to remind listeners to please call in with questions or comments, and you can also use our email. And the call-in number is 1-866-472-5792, and the email address is specialneedsadvocacy@msn.com. Rich, we're very excited to have Chancellor Rhee with us today. Why don't you go ahead and introduce her to our listeners?
Okay, I'd like to say hello to everybody, and I'd like to start off by just giving you some facts about the Washington, D.C. school system. It has among the highest per pupil expenditures, but among the lowest academic performance levels. According to the National Assessment of Educational Progress data for the 2006-07 school year, compared to other states, D.C. ranked last in reading and math scores for fourth and eighth graders. It had the largest achievement gap between black and white students in the fourth grade of any school system in the country. Schools in D.C. show a 10% proficiency rate for their students. The achievement gap between white and black students at the secondary level is 70% in some subject areas. For years, the District of Columbia public school system has been crippled by a growing and non-responsive bureaucracy. Calls and emails are ignored, employees are not paid, parents take time off of work to fill out forms only to have them lost, textbooks sit in warehouses. Despite all of that, the author of that commentary says that the District of Columbia public school system will be a model for urban school reform. And the author of that commentary is Chancellor Michelle Rhee, and that was in Forbes magazine in January of 2008. Just to give you a little bit of background about Chancellor Rhee, she was appointed by Mayor Adrian Fenty June 12, 2007. She leads the D.C. Public Schools, which is a district numbering 50,000 students in 144 schools. She has already worked on transforming many urban public school systems through her work with the New Teacher Project. She founded the New Teacher Project in 1997 and is now a nationally recognized leader in understanding and developing innovative solutions to the challenges of new teacher hiring. As chief executive officer and president, she partnered with school districts, state education agencies, nonprofit organizations, and unions to transform the way schools and other organizations recruit, select, and train highly qualified teachers in difficult-to-staff schools. Her work implemented widespread reform in teacher hiring, improving teacher hiring in Atlanta, Baltimore, Chicago, Miami, New York, Oakland, and Philadelphia. Her commitment to excellence in education began in a Baltimore classroom in 1992 as a Teach for America teacher. She serves on the advisory boards of many educational organizations. She has her bachelor's degree in government from Cornell, master's degree in public policy from the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. Chancellor Rhee, we're honored to have you with us today.
Thank you.
I want to start off kind of at the end. When Washington, D.C. public schools are functioning the way that you hope they will be, what will we see? What will the parents of Washington, D.C., the students of Washington, D.C., what will they see?
I think we will be the highest performing urban school district in the country. We will be the district of choice for the families of D.C., and we will have closed the achievement gap between poor and minority students and our wealthier white students. But in particular at the school level, we want to develop a system of neighborhood schools that all offer an incredibly compelling and engaging instructional program for students, where we're giving every child a very solid foundation of academic skills so that they can be successful in life.
How long do you think it will take to get to that place you just described?
That's a very good question. The mayor and I talk about sort of two Fenty terms. So 8 years to really get to the level that the school district needs to be in, obviously knowing that that the school district has been dysfunctional for a large number of years. Obviously, changing that is not going to happen overnight. And we don't just want to become, a functioning school district. We want to become the best urban school district in the country. So how to get to that level over time, is something that I'm not sure that a lot of school districts have been able to accomplish. And certainly none of the large urban districts that have been most troubled.
Chancellor Rhee, I know that there's been a lot of talk about the turnover, a lot of turnover in the past 8 to 10 years in terms of the superintendents that preceded you. Mm-hmm. Do you plan to stay on and see the vision through its fruition in DCPS?
Absolutely, that's my plan.
Absolutely. Okay, Rich?
Michelle Davis. I have to distinguish between the two Michelles today. Michelle Davis and I were both really amused and caught our attention when we read the Newsweek article describing you, and particularly the little story that it told about when you were a teacher in Baltimore and a bumblebee was flying around your classroom, and your kids were shouting and misbehaving and excited, and you killed the bumblebee, popped it in your mouth, and swallowed it, and quickly got all of their attention. And
yeah.
I want to draw a little line to some of your recent actions, which include recommending 23 schools for closure, I think recommending 31 principals to be dismissed. Is this similar? Are you again trying to capture everybody's attention and make a statement?
I actually think that these are very different things. When I was a first-year teacher and the bumblebee incident happened, it was literally out of, sort of the fact that the kids were all jumping on the tables and the chairs, and they sort of, I could not regain their attention until I sort of, got rid of the distraction. And so that was the first thing. And the second thing was just the fact that, I thought it was important to sort of send a message to the kids. And I think I did that through that action. I think that these things that we have been implementing, the reforms that we've been implementing here, are much less about garnering attention or, distractions, that sort of thing, and much more about ensuring that we can put systems and processes and accountability in place so that we are better serving children.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I saw you speaking about accountability. I saw a clip of you talking to a group shown on the evening news, and you said the two major problems in D.C. are a lack of accountability and that decisions are made in the best interests of adults rather than kids. Could you elaborate a little bit on those two?
Sure. When I got to the district, there were a number of things that I saw and sort of people that I talked to that led me to my first conclusion, which is that the complete and utter lack of accountability was one of the main things that were hamstringing us as a district, not just us. I mean, I think this is the case with most large urban school districts across the country. If we don't have a system set up where we are very clearly tracking what success looks like and holding people accountable to making progress on those measures of success, then we're never going to get anywhere as a district. And I think that's incredibly important to ensure that people understand very clearly what their job responsibilities are and how we're going to determine whether or not they are moving student achievement forward. And then if they're not, there has to be a specific consequence for that. The second comment was one where, again, this is not just an issue here in the District of Columbia, but in many school districts across the country, is that oftentimes decisions are driven by politics and by, sort of adults who are making decisions based on political interests and that sort of thing. And what we're trying to do here, and this is under the leadership of the mayor and city council also supporting us in that effort, is making sure that we become a district that can finally be making every single decision within what we believe is in the best interest of students.
It seems to us, both Michelle and I are in the Washington, D.C. area. We're educational consultants working in D.C. and the surrounding districts. Seems to us that you came in on a wave of optimism and hope, and lately a lot of the press has been negative. The articles have more taken a tone of not knowing the standards for which you fired the principals, not involving the community in the decisions to close the schools, coming in to cut spending, yet asking for additional spending, at one point. And so I think when you talk about accountability, there's some questions, at least in the press and from some activists, about where's the accountability of what you're doing? How would you respond to that?
I would say that ultimately the accountability that I face is the exact same that we would want anyone in the district to face, which is, ultimately are the student achievement levels moving upwards? Are we making progress on those? And so, at the end of the day, that's the measure on which I should be judged. And certainly, I think there are a lot of people out there who are saying, wow, you've accomplished so much in your first year. I mean, you've done more things in your first year to change sort of the infrastructure and the sort of institution more than anyone else has. And I think that is all well and good, but at the end of the day, if those things are not resulting in drastically higher levels of student achievement, 3, 4, 5 years down the line, then they will, not have been the things that people sort of, the exciting things that people think they are now. So I think that, at the end of the day, that's how we have to be judged. And certainly in the interim, because it does take a number of years before you start to see at a district level the significant student achievement increases that you want to see. In the interim, there are other ways that we can measure our success. I think that that if you look at those measures, there's a lot of progress.
We're gonna continue with this discussion with Chancellor Michelle Rhee after a brief break.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Chelsea School has served as a beacon of hope for students with language-based learning disabilities in the Washington, D.C. metro area for over 32 years. It is a college preparatory school serving students grades 5 through 12. Our program model emphasizes literacy remediation, math, science, and technology. For more information, visit our website at www.chelseaschool.edu or call 301-585-1430, extension 303.
How can we be powerful advocates for the children in our lives? How do we ensure that they're getting the best education possible? The Special Needs Advocacy Training Institute prepares parents and educators to be outstanding advocates for school success. The Training Institute is based on Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis's Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book. The book is comprehensive, practical, and easy to read. Visit specialneedsadvocacyinstitute.com to learn more about this dynamic training opportunity. Parents, are you concerned with your child's progress at school? Educators educators. Do you wish that you could do more for your class? Are you interested in pursuing a career in educational advocacy? At SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com, you'll learn how to make a difference in the lives of children. You will also find information about Rich and Michelle's consulting and advocacy services. Our children need powerful advocates to ensure that they're getting an appropriate education. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn what you can do to more effectively advocate for the children in your life.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Teach your children well.
You're listening to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education with hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or tip regarding today's topic, give us a call toll-free at 866-472-5792. That number again is 866-472-5792. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Teach Your Children Well. This is Michelle Davis, and I'm here with Rich Weinfeld with our very special guest today, Chancellor Michelle Rhee from the District of Columbia Public Schools for our nation's capital. Chancellor Rhee, before we get into the next questions, I also want to remind our listeners, please call us and call in to Chancellor Rhee, you'll be able to ask her questions or make comments, and you can also email us at specialneedsadvocacy@msn.com. Chancellor Rhee, I'm very interested in the area of special education, and I've been working in the District of Columbia Public Schools as a consultant for about 10 years now. So I've seen a lot of changes happen, and as I just shared with you, I'm excited about the excitement around your ideas of school reform. You know, lawsuits are a big source of the district's budget at this point, it appears, in the area of special education. And lawsuits are meant to push the schools to serve students better, but it seems that they've wound up in some ways forcing the school system to spend, I think it's $120 million a year to pay private tuition for our approximately 2,500 students and bus them to districts outside of the District of Columbia. And that left less money to fix the system's own inadequate special education programs. And I personally have been very interested in really having the district develop programs so that we don't have to ship the kids to or bus the kids to other areas and keep them in the community. Mm-hmm. Will the district continue to bus the students with special needs out of the district? Is that part of your reform plan? Or will the district strive to improve the special education facilities to help tackle this problem? What are your ideas in this area?
So the dynamic that you describe is exactly right, and it's made even worse by the fact that our transportation costs to transport those students is about $74 million a year, which is significant. It's about $18,000 per child just for transportation.
Wow.
Yeah, so you can see why a lot of people look at those dollars and believe that it is a very ineffective use of the resources and does ultimately impact the district's ability to ensure that money is going into our schools. We're absolutely putting together an aggressive plan around how we're going to fix special education. This is not something that we will be able to do overnight, but we believe that where we start is thinking about how we build capacity within our current DCPS schools to be able to serve our special needs populations well. And we're doing that through a number of initiatives this year that are extremely exciting. We are forming partnerships with external groups and nonprofit organizations who have expertise in providing high-quality special education services in schools, and we're having them partner with us on particular classrooms within a school, in some cases, certain wings of the schools or the entire school, of really helping us to ensure that we're bringing best practices from all across the country into what we're doing. We have an incentive program for schools, high-performing schools that have traditionally served our special education students well, to incent them to accept more special education students into their schools. We are looking into developing a lab model initiative so that we can have really great inclusion practices going on in a school and the opportunity to have teachers and principals from across the district come in and watch those practices being implemented at the ground level in a school and then take those practices back. And then we're also looking at more sort of school-wide reform models that we believe will have a significant impact on special education. So, for example, we're looking at implementing for next year a full-service model in a number of our middle schools where we're bringing wraparound services into the schools. And this is incredibly important because there are a lot of circumstances where our students need certain social services, guidance, counseling, social work, et cetera. And in the past, the perception has always been that in order for a student to have access to those kinds of services, you had to refer them to special education. We're making those services available at the school more broadly so that teachers can refer kids to receive those social services without necessarily having them go into special education. And then we're also implementing a program more broadly in the district called SST, where we are ensuring that we are looking at students who are far below grade level, who need some level of academic intervention, but maybe they don't need to be referred to special ed, and we're really providing intensive support to those students so that we can quickly accelerate their learning. So if you look across the continuum at what we're doing, I think there are a number of things that will be happening starting from as early as next year that will significantly have a positive impact on our ability to serve all students well, but particularly those with high needs.
Chancellor Reed, when I listen to you talk about that, I mean, it sounds like a lot of wonderful initiatives. It sounds to me like what I'm hearing in other school districts, a real emphasis on inclusion, which certainly is positive for many students, but you know, it's my belief and Michelle Davis's belief that there's always going to be some students who need services beyond the typical school, and that's why we have a continuum of services. Do you have plans for the students who can't be served within the DCPS schools?
So we are looking to aggressively implement inclusion in as many circumstances as we possibly can, and I think that the bar for that within the district has tended to be lower than what we're implementing now. Are there students in some cases with needs that are so severe that they do need some services and supports and resources and an infrastructure that requires a different environment? In some cases, that's certainly the case, but we also believe that those environments can often be delivered within separate classrooms within a broader school community. So we want to look at the continuum of inclusion as well.
That makes sense to me. And as Rich and I said, I mean, we very much hope that you'll provide the district will continue to provide will start providing the full continuum of services. And it sounds like, and on the break we were talking a little bit about differentiated instruction, and it sounds like you've used some national models for reform at schools like West Elementary, where every student would have an individual learning plan similar to an individualized education plan that's required for students with disabilities, such as a differentiated learning lab. Is this the case, and if so, is there evidence of the efficacy of the program? And not to put too much in one question, but has the district been using, and specifically you've been using, research-based, evidence-based methods in order to do the planning?
Absolutely. As we have looked at what our needs are across the district and what reforms we are going to implement, what programs, what initiatives to really help to move student achievement levels forward, we've been doing all of that research around which are the most effective things based on data and based on numbers and based on research. So that's absolutely been a part of our analysis of what the options are. And I think that that ongoing has to be a part of the culture. We talked earlier about accountability. The bottom line is there are a whole lot of people out there, there are a lot of organizations, there are a lot of programs who want to help us with our reform efforts in D.C. And what we have to do is set up a strict system of accountability so that we understand which of the programs are actually showing the most efficacy, which ones are producing the best results for kids, and then we look to how to expand the ones that really are the most effective.
You know, thank you for that. What this, in my opinion, it, you know, the foundation of a good classroom, of a good school, of a good school community, learning environment throughout the whole district really relates, as you know, to the people who are teaching and delivering instruction to kids. Mm-hmm. And in my experience, from my experience, I would guess that one of the biggest challenges that you have in your reform efforts and the district has is really having not just highly qualified staff that are highly qualified under No Child Left Behind or Individuals with Disabilities Education Improvement Act, but truly are highly qualified to be delivering the content. They're highly qualified in other areas as well in terms of very informed and well trained in terms of the use of behavior, of full continuum of positive behavior support, just the entire training issue and staff quality issue. Can you help us understand a little bit about how you envision that to be impacting this process and what your challenges are in this area?
Okay. You know, we really believe that, you know, in everything that we're doing, it's just incredibly important to have, you know, a strict.
Chancellor Ray?
I'm not hearing Chancellor either.
Oh, okay. Sounds like she got cut off here. We were asking Chancellor Ree about the status of highly qualified staff, and you know, the reason that I asked that question is when we go into the school system in the District of Columbia, there are times when the administration will share with me that there is some concern about the qualifications of staff or just the skill level of staff, and we know that this is a very important level for student achievement, especially in closing the achievement gap between the students who have racial differences. Rich, would you agree?
Absolutely, I know Chancellor Ree's background is creating new.
Hello?
Teachers.
Oh, she's back.
I'm back.
Okay,
I'm
good,
sorry.
Good.
We were talking about highly qualified teachers. Sorry about that.
Yes,
we got disconnected.
That's okay.
You know, one of the things that that I have been talking to a lot of legislators about is the need to move from this idea of highly qualified teachers that look at teacher sort of certification qualifications on the front end to this idea of highly effective teachers.
Yes.
We have to look at whether or not someone is producing results in the classroom, because I think if I've heard lots of stories and I've actually seen lots of teachers in classrooms in DCPS and throughout the country who may not, you know, necessarily have the master's degree or the national board certification, but who are incredibly effective. And if you look at their student achievement levels and the data, you can see that the kids in their classrooms are absolutely learning. And I think that the strategies that those people employ, what they're able to do with kids, those things are much, much more impactful and they are much more meaningful than what, sort of paperwork they may or may not have on the front end. So I think we have to shift the dynamic very much in that direction as a nation moving forward.
We'd absolutely agree with that, and we'll come right back after a break, and hope you'll be able to join us, I understand, for another segment. Thanks for listening. Teach your children well. Be sure to email us at specialneedsadvocacy@msn.com with questions for Chancellor Ree. Come on back after the break. We'll see you then.
Your life, your health, your network. Voice America Health and Wellness.
How can we be powerful advocates for the children in our lives? How do we ensure that they're getting the best education possible? The Special Needs Advocacy Training Institute prepares parents and educators to be outstanding advocates for school success. The Training Institute is based on Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis's Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book. The book is comprehensive, practical, and easy to read. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn more about this dynamic training opportunity. Parents, are you concerned with your child's progress at school? Educators, do you wish that you could do more for your class? Are you interested in pursuing a career in educational advocacy? At SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com, you'll learn how to make a difference in the lives of children. You will also find information about Rich and Michelle's consulting and advocacy services. Our children need powerful advocates to ensure that they're getting an appropriate education. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn what you can do to more effectively advocate for the children in your life.
Chelsea School has served as a beacon of hope for students with language-based learning disabilities in the Washington, D.C. metro area for over 32 years. It is a college preparatory school serving students grades 5 through 12. Our program model emphasizes literacy remediation, math, science, and technology. For more information, visit our website at www.chelseaschool.edu or call 301-585-1430, extension 303.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Teach your children well.
You're listening to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education with hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or tip regarding today's topic, give us a call toll-free at 866-472-5792. That number again is 866-472-5792. Now, back to the program.
Hi, this is Rich Weinfeld, and we're on Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education with my co-host Michelle Davis. And we have with us Chancellor Michelle Reeve from the Washington, D.C. school system today. Chancellor Reeve, I wanted to follow up on an earlier question. I asked about some of the decisions that have been made and, you know, some of the criticism that has been directed at you for maybe not being transparent about how the decisions were made, about not including community groups or parents in individual schools when decisions were made.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the answer to the other question was that the results are what you should be judged on. But I wanted to go back a little bit more to the process.
Sure.
Because I think, you know, people are not necessarily trusting of waiting for results. They want
right.
to know that how the process is really working.
Absolutely.
That their voices are being heard. So.
Absolutely. I think there are a couple things. One, you referred to the school closings, and you know, we were actually very transparent in that process, in that we were very clear about the criteria that we utilized to determine the first list of groups, a group of schools that were on the list, and then the secondary criteria that we utilized to sort of get down to the final list. And then we engaged in 10 weeks of community meetings where we heard from people about whether they thought the decision was right or wrong and why. And based on the feedback that we got from the community, we ended up modifying that list and sort of came up with the final recommendations to the mayor. I think that, you know, if you talk to any urban superintendent or school board across the country who's tried to close down schools, what you hear from people is that you never have people who are excited about you closing down schools. And for the most part, what you're going to get is people who are very, very unhappy about their individual schools closing. But what we feel is that we went through an incredibly transparent process where we included a lot of folks. And it was interesting because at the end of the day, lots of people came to me and said, wow, you know, we thought that you were just sort of paying lip service, that you weren't really going to listen to people, that you'd already made your decision up in your mind, but we see now that you were really listening. And, you know, that was the schools that made strong cases for why we should, shift some decisions. And then other schools came back and they said, we knew you weren't listening to us because we didn't make the decision that they wanted us to make. But one of the things that I try to stress to the community is that me listening does not mean that I'm going to do everything that people ask me to do. It's impossible to run a school district in that way because people are literally asking me in many cases to do completely opposite things. Mm-hmm. So that's not possible. What I have to do is, and my responsibility is to hear the input and the insights of a whole lot of people and then at the end of the day make the decision that I believe is most likely to move student achievement forward. It's the second topic that you talked about, which was principal renewals and reappointments. And you know, I went out to a school community who sort of had some concerns about this, and they said, well, we weren't part of the process. I said, well, you know, I don't make personnel decisions by consensus or by committee. Now, that doesn't mean that I didn't hear everything that parents had to say on both sides. You know, some parents were thrilled with this principal. Some parents, you know, thought that this principal was the most awful person in the world. My job is to take all of that and the data and then to make the decision that I think is best. But that decision is not going to be sort of taking a tally and taking a vote from everyone. That's not how we make personnel decisions. And the other thing that I think is sometimes difficult with personnel decisions is we can't, as a district, share all of our reasons and rationales why we made certain decisions. Those are actually personal and confidential. So sometimes, it's a little hard for people to understand because we can't necessarily share all the personnel information that we're involved in the decisions. It seems like, you know, to people, like, they're not sure why the decision was made. But I think at the end of the day, it does come down to sort of trust and knowing that we are making every decision in a way that we believe is in the best interest of kids and one that we believe is going to, again, you know, move student achievement levels up significantly.
Chancellor Rhee, if I have this correctly, the troubled schools, the ones that are slated to close, the ones that have not been making adequate yearly progress, and the most troubled schools, it's my understanding that you have several options in terms of what to do here. And it's my understanding that one of the options would be to convert to charter schools, and another would be to turn the schools over to the state, so to speak. And I've read that you've been saying that you want to keep control of these schools, that that's not in your plan. Instead, you'd have an alternative plan, or you would hire consulting groups, private consulting groups to come in and take over the schools. Can you talk about a little bit about why it's important, if it is, for the district to maintain the control and what the pros and cons are of outsourcing the problem?
You're absolutely right that with schools that are in restructuring status, we have several different options for what we can do, and one of those options is turning a school into a charter school. Another is turning the school over to the state. Those are both options that we considered strongly and that we will consider strongly moving forward as well. And I think that in any of those circumstances or scenarios where I felt like either one of those options would produce stronger student achievement results, then we would go in that direction. But for the purposes of this year in these 27 schools, we did not choose to move in the direction that would include either of those two options specifically, but we did choose other options such as reconstituting schools, such as bringing in an external partner to help with the management of the school, and some other what we call option 5, which is implementing different whole school reform models at the schools.
Chancellor Rhee, in the Forbes commentary that I opened the show with that you wrote in January, you talked about the No Child Left Behind legislation, and you spotlighted that you thought it was important that it highlighted the difficulties urban school systems were having, so their scores didn't get lost among a general state or not get noticed. You also talked a little bit about some parts of No Child Left Behind that you would like to see revised, and I'd like to hear you speak a little bit about that.
Well, one of them is one that we've talked about earlier, which is I believe that one of the most positive things about No Child Left Behind was the increased focus that it put on the quality of teachers and the importance of that. I do think, though, that in an ideal world, we would move more towards looking at highly effective teachers rather than highly qualified teachers at the front end. So I think that's one important change. I think that, you know, in terms of the area of special education, you know, the IEP for individual students is what I think should drive the analysis of whether or not a student has been successful. And so I think that looking at other measures outside of what the IEP says oftentimes can be confusing to both the students and the families and the teachers who are involved, wanting to know should I be driving towards what success, how success is defined in the IEP versus, you know, the test scores, that sort of thing. So I think that that needs to be aligned better. And I also think that the federal government needs to look very carefully at the assessment and the definition of success around English language learners, and understanding that kids who are coming into the country at a late date, you know, what is our expectation in terms of the time frame on which they would become proficient in English. So I think we can continue to have extremely high expectations of all students, but at the same time understand that there are, you know, different circumstances, again, especially with special education students and English language learners, where we can continue to have high expectations but also reasonable ones.
I'm glad you brought up the learners with limited English proficiency, because I believe that in most of the folks that I speak with, and then what I've read about what you're doing, this seems to be a major theme in terms of how the administrators and the teachers see their challenges in the classroom in terms of the number of students that they have with limited English proficiency, and then they're striving to, of course, have, you know, those students also be literate and also, of course, pass the same, you know, high-stakes testing. The district seems to be using what I believe, you know, you're again, calling a differentiated approach to evaluate the school performance. How does that relate to learners with English limited English proficiency? What is the plan to quantify some factors that might make a difference for those students?
In terms of the limited English proficiency students?
Exactly.
You know, I think that there are multiple measures that we can use. What I think is the most important with limited English proficient students is thinking about the time horizon on which we expect them to become proficient in English, and then how we look at benchmark sort of assessments in the interim to ensure that they're making the progress that we would want to see that's going to get them to the ultimate outcome of proficiency in English.
Chancellor, I wanted to ask you, we've talked a lot about students at one disadvantage or another, whether it be low-functioning academically, special ed, limited English. What about some of the more advanced students who live within the district whose parents may have them in private schools now and may be skeptical about your school system being able to provide not only basic needs but also advanced needs? What ideas do you have in that realm?
Yeah, I think, you know, this is, again, where differentiated instruction comes in, because as I talked to principals across the district who were principals of more successful schools where, you know, the children have already extraordinarily high proficiency levels, that it's important to look at each individual student and say, you know, proficiency is not enough. We want to move students to being advanced. And how can we look at every individual student and understand where they are now and how we can not just look sort of at, you know, what are the overall proficiency rates of the school, but every single individual student to ensure that they're moving aggressively, at, you know, sort of on a one-on-one basis to make sure that every single kid is moving as aggressively towards, you know, the highest levels of academic achievement possible.
Chancellor Rhee, this segment is going to be coming to an end, and I know we promised you'd be able to leave for working with the mayor, but we want to thank you so much for being with us.
Absolutely.
You have an incredible task, and I was struck when you said your first year. It seems like a lot more than a year, and I think you're just coming up to your first year anniversary.
I'm just coming up to my first year. You know, I keep saying that it seems like less than a year, but other people say it seems like more. So.
Well, we hope we'll be able to talk to you again in the future and
absolutely.
Follow the progress. And thank you so much for your candor and for spending time with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Your vision is really inspiring other communities around the nation as well, so I'd also like to thank you for that.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Bye-bye.
Come on back after a break. We're on Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education, and Rich and I will continue our conversation about school reform and hot topics in the news in the area of education. Come on back.
Helping you make informed decisions for your life. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
How can we be powerful advocates for the children in our lives? How do we ensure that they're getting the best education possible? The Special Needs Advocacy Training Institute prepares parents and educators to be outstanding advocates for school success. The Training Institute is based on Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis's Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book. The book is comprehensive, practical, and easy to read. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn more about this dynamic training opportunity. Parents, are you concerned with your child's progress at school? Educators, do you wish that you could do more for your class? Are you interested in pursuing a career in educational advocacy? At SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com, you'll learn how to make a difference in the lives of children. You will also find information about Rich and Michelle's consulting and advocacy services. Our children need powerful advocates to ensure that they're getting an appropriate education. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn what you can do to more effectively advocate for the children in your life.
Chelsea School has served as a beacon of hope for students with language-based learning disabilities in the Washington, D.C. metro area for over 32 years. It is a college preparatory school serving students grades 5 through 12. Our program model emphasizes literacy remediation, math, science, and technology. For more information, visit our website at www.chelseaschool.edu or call 301-585-1430, extension 303.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Teach your children well.
You're listening to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education with hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or tip regarding today's topic, give us a call toll-free at 866-472-5792. That number again is 866-472-5792. Now, back to the program.
Hello, this is Rich Weinfeld along with my co-host Michelle Davis, and we just finished speaking with Chancellor Michelle Rhee. Each week we like to spend a few minutes reviewing some of the hot topics in education, and I have a story that was published in Education Week this week that is the National Summary of Diplomas. This is funded in part by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, tracking how many students are achieving graduation. And the last year that the statistics are tallied for is the year of 2005, and the headline was that graduation rates are on the increase, which of course is good news. When you look though at some of the sub-data, I was struck by the fact that males are trailing females in every category. Males are graduating at a rate of 67% compared to females at 75%. And when you look at the different racial groups, you find that consistent in every racial group. Michelle, I think you also had another story that you wanted to share that was kind of on the same issue, or at least related to gender.
I do, Rich, but you know, I'd like to comment first.
Sure.
It seems to me that you know, the stereotypical areas of interest and skill that we used to think possibly about boys and girls is really being dispelled at this point. I mean, no longer is math and science for boys. In fact, I've got a Perspective magazine here on language and literacy, and the article is talking about the importance of mediating self-talking to improve middle school students' mathematical problem solving. And part of what I'm struck by is the use of language, meaning self-talking. Oh, okay, I have a problem here. I have to balance these equations. What should I do? That's a language mediation of a math problem. And we traditionally, I think, have thought of girls being stronger in language, boys being stronger in math. It just doesn't seem to be the case anymore.
Well, I think there's a lot of statistics that, on the one hand, are good to see that girls have caught up in the area of math. On the other hand, my experience in the schools, and I'm sure yours is that the language arts are now part of virtually every subject area, so that we're asking all of our students not only to speak about solving the math problem, but to write about how they solve the math problem, which is a skill that, you know, again, when you generalize about the genders, that boys in general don't do as well on or not as interested in as their female counterparts. So I wonder then, is that having an impact on their math performance? There was a study that came out about a week ago, and I think we commented on a previous show from AAUW, the American Association of University Women, which stated purpose was to dispel the quote-unquote myth of the boys' crisis and say that really boys are doing okay in our schools. And
it didn't really pan out, did it?
Well, there are statistics that can prove that, but there also, I think, are many statistics that show that our sons and brothers are not doing as well. So that certainly remains an area of concern.
You know, last week when we were talking about the area of giftedness, we talked about how there's Yale University is using a completely different approach to measure, quote, IQ or intelligence. And I wonder how the way we change our measurement tools might actually change, you know, the strengths that we see between boys and girls.
Interesting.
If we measure intelligence in a different way or we measure skill level in a different way, perhaps it's not the internal skill level of boys and girls. Perhaps it's what we're asking them to do.
Did you have another article related to the gender?
Rich, I think we're about ready to start to preview our next week's show and maybe the show after that. Why don't you go ahead and tell the listeners what we'll be up to next week?
Along this same line, we're gonna have a show focusing on gender next week, and timely with all these things in the news. We're going to have Dr. David Satker, who is the author of what was a seminal book in the 90s and is about to be reissued in a revised format called Failing at Fairness. And David Satker and his late wife Myra Satker really put the spotlight in the early 90s on how our schools were failing girls, and was much needed and really had a profound effect on education. David will talk about the issues that still remain for our girls, as well as the issues that still remain for our boys. We'll also have Dr. Terry New, who is my co-author on a book called Helping Boys Succeed in School.
That's a great book for our listeners.
Thank you. Well, Terry will focus on the issues that are impacting boys, and more importantly, we'll talk about solutions, both academic solutions and also social-emotional solutions for, you know, how can we get our boys more connected in school, how can we break something which is referred to as the boy code and help boys to expand on their own possibilities and what is acceptable for them. So we're not anticipating the show as a debate. We're anticipating the show as a time to really focus on both girls and boys and the needs that both genders continue to have in our schools, and how we can best meet those challenges.
And then the week after that, we're going to explore what I believe is a hot, 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 burning hot topic in education, which is the area of the explosion of autism and pervasive developmental disorder-related problems. In the news, we're hearing about some very tragic events that have happened, let's say, at Virginia Tech. And if we look back in the whole arena of social proficiency, we know that the children with autism and different pervasive developmental disorders really struggle in that area. And this area also relates to teasing and bullying for me. And so we're going to explore this hot topic of how we are working with this explosion of students with autism. A few years ago, autism, the prevalence of autism in our society was 1 in 10,000 children, And at this point, it is approximately either 1 in 50 or 1 in 100, depending on what country you're looking at. But either way, there has been an explosion, and we need to find a much better way to serve these children, both in general education and in special education programs. So we'll be exploring that the week after next.
And when we talk about autism, that's such a wide variety of different kinds of challenges and strengths. Certainly we want to focus on students with Asperger's syndrome who are capable of great things academically but also have significant social challenges. And so we'll shed some light on that topic within the autism topic as well. Our guest is going to be Dr. Brenda Miles, who is one of the foremost authorities on autism and on educational solutions for students with autism anywhere in the world. She's written numerous books, and she will share with us information about both the problem, but again, more importantly, about solutions to the problem.
Well, you know, this whole show is about exploring issues in schools and school systems that can make a difference between what we are now and what we could be as a society. And Rich and I very much believe that with high expectation and an education system that works, all children can achieve. And we thank you very much for listening today. We hope you'll come back next week and check us out on our podcast and different ways to view the show, to listen to the show anytime, especially...
Hey.
On our website, specialneedsadvocacyinstitute.com. Thanks for joining us.
We'll be back with you next week.
And know they love you.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's edition of Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education. Join your hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis again next Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Teach your children well, their father's health did slowly go by.